Hey, lovers and friends, I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out.
So hello. I don't know, a couple of weeks since I saw you guys.
I know. You went on a trip.
Yeah.
You had to tell us about that.
Well, the trip was fun. I had to drive in Mexico.
Ooh.
And you know how when you rent a car, like you can pay extra to have other people drive, and I'm so cheap that I'm never going to do that, and I'm always so cheap that I never get the extra insurance and whatever. But it ended up being fine until we were driving back. We were down on the Baja Peninsula. Mm-hmm. So we flew into Cabo, drove north up to Cerritos Beach, which is this teeny little beach community where all you do is surf.
Oh, how awesome.
And then they have all these like little beach restaurants, and they party hard. And they are amazing when it comes to music.
Oh,
like every single so awesome. Little beach restaurant has a DJ stand. And at least over the weekend when we were there, like that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I mean, I felt like it was War of the Bands because they all had their DJs or their live bands. And it was like, they were like literally right next to each other and there's no walls. So it's like clashing music the whole time. And I'm like, ah, it's too much.
Did Corbin and Liv go with you, brother?
No, it wasn't. So this was me and Livia.
Okay.
And then Klein and Deb.
Oh,
that's so awesome.
Because Klein just turned 18, and Livia and Klein have been friends since kindergarten.
Yeah.
So, and they're graduating, and it worked out that we could go. And so,
I loved it.
What a good little graduation.
Yeah. It was kind of like a graduation thing, but then Livia is going to go do her own graduation travel on her own around
Europe. Where's she going to go?
London and then to Ibiza.
Okay.
Like the song by J-Lo. I don't know if you've heard it. Like, there's a lyric in there that says "London to Ibiza," and Livia's like, "This is gonna be our anthem song." Anyway,
who's she going with?
She's going to meet her friend that's living in London right
now. Oh, okay.
For college.
Aww.
Yeah, and then they're gonna come fly home together when she's done.
Aww.
So Laura? She'll do her finals, Laura.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she's got a great little life doing that.
I know. Livia's gonna have a good little time here, and then, but the. The crazy part about driving in Mexico was in La Paz, which is across, if you travel straight east from where we were staying, we went there to go swim with whale sharks.
Yay!
Which was terrifying and exciting and amazing.
But you also fell in love, too. So there's a love story attached to that.
With the marine biologist
running the tour.
Yeah, she was amazing. Carla, come here.
Hold my hand.
Yes, come hold my hand here. She had to hold my hand because I was, like, not getting anywhere near this, like, 20-foot-long shark whale thing. Because I'm like, it could fit me inside of its mouth.
Yeah.
And you're tall.
I mean, I was like, so she guides me over and I'm like, okay. But on the way back, we're driving through all these lights. And in Mexico, like they have similar rules. Like we drive on the same side of the road. They have stop signs. We have stop signs. They have stop lights. We have stop lights.
It's
a little different. It's kind of like, they kind of wave you on if they feel like it's your turn to go or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they have marked intersections. Sometimes they don't.
Oh, wow.
You never know what you're going to get every time you pull up to a new intersection. So not being from there, like it's like
Did
pretty
you guys
probably
rent
annoying.
A car?
Yeah. Okay. So I was driving the whole week.
Oh, yeah. Good for you. That's intense.
Yeah. This is why Brad doesn't like to travel because it's the international driving. It's nerve wracking.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get it. I understand. Yeah. I'll do it once in a while for you because it's not as fun.
It's kind of scary even being in a car with a driver because they're like,
I had three backseat drivers, which compounded the stress.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm like, guys, it's a foreign country.
Well,
I'm going
to
be cautious.
They just are like, you know, you're holding on to, you know, your seat while they're weaving in between traffic and zooming through like red lights.
I didn't zoom through. So here's what I did. For about 2 miles in my rearview mirror, there was a police officer following me.
Oh,
2 miles straight, like right behind me. Oh. Didn't give any space. So he's obviously following me. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be perfect. I'm just, there's no speed limit sign. So I'm just going with the flow of traffic, doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing. And as soon as I'm like, guys, that police officer has been following me forever. Like, what is going on? Like, they're just waiting for something to happen. Well, I didn't know this, but in Mexico, they have 3 quick flashes of green lights. Mm-hmm. And that means it's going to turn red.
Oh.
It's like our version of yellow. But they also have yellow lights. So I have no idea because I don't see the green lights flashing a whole lot. So that happens to me. And the car next to me goes through the intersection. But rental cars are very clearly marked. Yeah. And, you know, they know that I'm a foreigner.
Oh, yeah.
So I go through this flashing green light and they pull me over immediately. Well, I don't speak Spanish at all. So thank goodness Klein has taken 4 years of Spanish. Okay. And me and Deborah in the front, we're just like, oh, talk to him, roll down the back window. So the police officer is like talking to Klein. He's interpreting the best he can for us.
Yeah.
And
oh,
he
so
did
cool.
such an amazing job.
Aww.
And my impression of this whole incident is, I mean, they can give me a ticket. But how are they going to enforce that ticket?
Yeah.
You know, am I going to show up at the courthouse? Am I going to mail it in? Like, there's no way of enforcing that.
Yeah.
So the only way they could enforce that is to drag me into jail. And they're not going to drag you into jail and
piss off.
Because you went
through the flashy lights.
Yeah, exactly. They don't want to make people not want to come back to Mexico. You know, that's not going to help either. So he kindly offered to have us pay him directly, 3,000 pesos.
Of course.
Which is about 240 US dollars.
Oh my God. And he pocketed that.
No one had any cash on them. We were all card carrying people.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, I have no cash. I cannot do anything about this situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, ugh, you guys are fine. Just go. Just don't drive through any more of those. But don't know if that's a thing that police officers can do in foreign countries, that's what it felt like.
That's what they do. And whether or not they turn that in or not. That's why he was following you.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I know.
He wanted his beer money for the night.
Oh yeah. Which is like, awesome for them. Way to go. Side hustle. It's a great side hustle.
Oh my gosh, you're awesome.
If I had, Deb had a dollar on her.
Like,
and she did offer it. And he's like, no, can't even get me a beer with that. Exactly.
I got some weed in my pocket. No, I'm just cheesy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that was the most exciting part, was getting pulled over and having Klein interpret. And I was like, wow, he did such
that's
a good
so
job.
That's so cool.
Way to go. Way to put his 4 years of Spanish into.
I know.
So once again, I feel like I'm like such a baby man child.
Baby man child? Oh, explain this. I don't even know what that means.
Well, there was a sex operation. It happened when I was leaving. No, when I travel and stuff like that, apparently if you're a really crappy driver, you don't have to drive in foreign countries. Everybody else is like, no, we got this. I mean, like, if I'm in a rural area, they'll be like, okay, you can have a go now.
Really?
But like, no one wants me trying to, you know, navigate in Paris. Like, oh, really? Did you want to die today? Because I'm like, it could happen.
That's so funny. Klein just was, he was back touring, you know, Europe with his cousin. She's almost my age, actually. And he drove around Paris. And he even, around the Arc de Triomphe, there's like a 7-lane roundabout.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Which looks terrifying. And he's like, yeah, I did that. And I'm like, holy smokes.
Well, teenagers have a whole different outlook on driving.
Oh, my gosh.
They're fearless.
Don't you remember, like, when you were...
Especially the boys.
When you were a teenager and stuff like that, I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, yeah, I can take the boat out by myself with 6 kids and I'm the only grown up. You know, you're like, yeah, I can do that. Sure. Like, you don't even think anything of it. And you do. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd be so anxious doing that. Now that I'm older, I'd be like, okay,
yeah.
Well, I think as you get older, you see the things that can go wrong.
Oh,
and then you start projecting all those things that could go wrong. and which makes you nervous.
Well, I think you become protective even more so when you have people you look out for.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You're not.
That's when I stopped going 110 miles per hour is when I had kids. I'm like, all right, I'll follow the speed limit. But I really thought I could have been a race car driver at some point in life, you know, teenagers.
But you would be like the one from Harlequin Nights or whatever, who'd be like drinking his cappuccino as he's going around the corner. You're like, no, but he's singing opera.
I'm just filling the road. I just go with it.
All right, Lisa, you picked a really great book.
Yeah.
So after, speaking of which, like looking out for things. So Taylor Jenkins Reid wrote my book that I love after I do. And I was introduced to her because of The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo that we read for book club.
Yeah.
Oh, and I loved it. Okay, this is how an observer.
And so I have consumed literally anything this woman will ever write, I will read. She's just a fantastic writer. The thing I really liked about this book was at the end, she and the person, the gal that read this book had a little interview.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was cute.
And I thought it was interesting for that little bit of insight from Taylor Jenkins Reid. And this just happened to be the gal that narrates this. She's like, this is my favorite of all of your books you've written. Yes. And I'm like, I feel the same way about this particular book. And I don't think it's as well known because it, you know, they are making The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo into a movie. And they're like, I think they're casting it right now. Like me and Livia are watching this closely because we're so excited for this to come out. But she was like, this is my favorite book. And I love that she, like, this is a romance novel. It's a contemporary romance novel.
Yeah.
About divorce.
Absolutely.
And it's like, who else could pull this off so beautifully?
Well, it's interesting because when you were telling us about this book, I kept thinking, this is not going to be a romance novel. Oh, it is such a romance novel.
It is. She did such a good job.
She did. And I do. She's a beautiful writer. She has intention. She did. It was so insightful.
She broke this book up into five sections. So section one, and I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but section one was called Where Does the Good Go? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got to That's the Way Love Goes, I'm like, that's a Janet Jackson song. And I'm like, wait a minute.
All of
and
these
then
are.
I looked into the other ones and they're all
Janet Jackson songs?
Not Janet Jackson, but Where Does the Good Go is a song by Tegan and Sarah. And I'm not familiar with it. But once I realized that, I'm like, oh my gosh, this section, that song is the theme for that section.
Oh, that's
so like there's
Lisa
this whole
thing.
Other artistic piece to this book that I didn't realize until
I broke it down.
She did such a good job. So we'll have to listen to the playlist of her five songs.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That kind of characterize this book. So anyway, the two main interests are Lauren and Ryan.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that I fell in love like with this section, Where Does the Good Go, is because it's like, is this like my love story she just retold?
I was wondering if
you guys relate?
I thought that I totally understood why you picked this book, and I didn't even realize that you picked this book because it was Jenkins. I was like, oh, Lisa picked this book because this is where Lisa's at in life right now.
Oh, it is where I'm at in life. And it's where, like, the whole meeting thing and even just Ryan's personality.
Oh,
reminds me so much of Brett.
Oh, it felt like she was telling your love story.
It did feel like that the whole time. And I'm like, Taylor gets me.
You're just like a Taylor girl.
I'm totally into Taylor's. I'll be Taylor. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So they meet. They're sophomores at UCLA. And
you and Brad were?
You know, it's kind of odd how we met because we did meet because of school.
Yeah, yeah.
After my sophomore year and going into my junior year.
Yes.
But I did a really weird thing with my school.
Yes,
where I was
accelerated master's
doing
program.
An accelerated to master's program. Mm-hmm. So my last, and I knocked off a couple of years before I started college. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know what I was, but it was my third year between my second and third year. And I changed my, what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I needed to get prereqs done. And I moved to Boise, and Brad just decided that he didn't want to do electrical work anymore. So he decided he was ready to go to college.
Follow the hot chick to Boise.
No, he and I ended up being next door neighbors.
Oh, that's right.
And the first time I ever saw him, I was like,
he's a player.
But then he was like, so he like saw me walking into the bookstore And he'd seen me because I was his next door neighbor. And I was like, he's a troublemaker. I can tell I'm going to stay with him. And I was trying to not get into relationships at all because I was like, I'm here for 2.5 months. I'm here for classes. I'm moving back. Got to start grad school. Not getting into that.
Yeah, how'd that work out for you?
It didn't at all. Because
you dated a few guys too while you were there, not just Brad.
I did, because that's just how I rolled back then. But yeah. I'm over that now. but for that, for Lauren and Ryan, like they had been noticing each other.
Yeah.
And it was adorable because he makes up some excuse to like talk to her.
And he tells the guy, keep talking to me, pretend to be talking to me. Pretend we're
talking, I'm really interested until this girl catches up to us.
She doesn't know that though. She's like, oh no. Like he is, now I have to go past him because I'm wearing what? She's wearing she thinks a stinky shirt that she wore before. So she's doesn't want to talk to him. Or right. He doesn't
but
have
she
to
had
talk
been
to
noticing him. They've noticed did, yeah. each other, which
totally
is, I think,
reminds
what we
me of like
do.
Eva and Norm, where uh-huh. Norm planned it. And then Eva was like, I just got off of the night shift at the hospital. And then, like, Norm had planned ambushing her at the teacher parent conferences because his was like right before hers.
Wow.
And so she was coming in like in sweatpants and, you know, a bun. And he was all like, hey, you. And she's like, oh no.
But then they chat for a while. And I loved the way that he asked her out.
Me too.
He's a very cryptic communicator. Yeah. And I think that this is an important aspect of his character.
I agree.
Because this is a vulnerable thing. I have never asked anyone out on a date in my entire life. And I cannot imagine how difficult that would be for a guy to be so vulnerable, because
that makes
rejection
sense.
Is like so freaking painful. And I don't know how these guys do it. And so Ryan did it so brilliantly.
He really did. You have to like love that boy.
Exactly.
Give that boy,
what did he say? He was like, maybe we'll meet, you know, you could ask me to meet you there and maybe I will.
He said, since you obviously are stalking me,
You probably should ask
me
out.
Yeah. Exactly. And Lauren's a little taken back by that. She's like, what? Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then she's so excited about it.
Yeah. She's
and
so
they go
cute.
On their little first date. And I love how Taylor goes through all these, like, I want to call them relationship milestones.
Oh, it's so true.
That are so, like, relatable. And yes. Like, as she was telling them, like, about the first date, I was thinking about my first date. She was talking about the first kiss. I was thinking about my first kiss. Like, with, and I mean, this is why Ryan reminds me of Brad so much. Cause like our first kiss, he was sweet enough to say like, is it okay if I kiss you? No one had ever asked me that before.
Yeah.
And I was like blown away by like, wow, you didn't
That's really
assume.
Respectful.
It was very respectful. And I was like, I love you even more. Like, that was super sweet.
Yeah, because Lauren, it just is overcome with how much she likes him. And so she leans over the table and kisses him.
Oh, yeah. And misses his lips.
Which is adorable.
Because this is how awkward kisses are. The first kiss
happens.
Is so memorable and cute and just – and then – then they date for a while and they, the I love you, which, okay, that I love you was like, I'm like, Taylor, did you spy on me again?
I think she did.
Because I remember like Brad and I dated for like a couple weeks before we were like, I love you. And I don't know how many dozens of guys I dated and I never loved any of them. I never told anybody I loved them.
Mm-hmm.
But with Brad, it was different because I knew I was going to be leaving, going back home to start grad school, and I would probably never see him again. And I had never been so sad in my life.
Aww.
Like the thought of like leaving somebody that I cared so much about. And I'm like, this is awful. But I'm like, I can't tell him I love him because what if he doesn't feel the same way about
me. Well, and the fear of rejection.
It's so terrifying and vulnerable. And so I remember we like stayed up late talking and we fell asleep on the couch. Like, you know, and he was just holding me all night long. He probably didn't move. He probably didn't sleep. He was probably so uncomfortable because there was no space for any of that. And I woke up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to get up and I'm going to have to go and he's going to have, and we're going to have to say goodbye. And I was like, I started to cry just thinking about it. And so I was like, I can't let that happen. So I was like, are you awake? So he was like, oh yeah, I've been awake. You know? I'm like, you know, I've been thinking, I'm like, I feel like, what if I told you that I loved you? And he was like, well, I would say it right back. Oh. I'm like, oh, okay, then I do. I love you. I was like, okay, we got that out of the way. But it's such a scary thing to do. And so I loved how they have that precious moment and that Taylor, like she got the vulnerable aspect, the vulnerability of falling in love with another person.
Yes.
And it made me just love them.
Yeah.
Yes.
That much more because it was so raw and real.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I really love the fact that you get to read this book when you're kind of in a raw and real moment of your life too. So. Ah,
life is, relationships are that way. But then after this, it starts to a little bit turn a corner.
Oh, yes.
So my question for you guys is like, they have moments where they're arguing over what size mattress to buy. They have moments where they're arguing about where to go out for dinner. They have arguments about what, you know, you've lost your wallet for the millionth
time. Now, there's nothing wrong with people who do that. I just want to say.
I totally relate to you, Lauren.
I mean.
There's a reason it's attached to my phone now.
Well, there's also a situation where they're on their honeymoon. And they get a flat tire.
Yes.
Exactly.
And they don't know how to fix a flat tire. And
Ryan forgot to call AAA in the madness of getting
intense.
Ready for the wedding.
They're kind of frustrated, which means, you know, in relationships, when you've been together a long time, sometimes your frustration with the situation spills over to being frustrated and taking that out on your partner.
Mm-hmm.
They catch themselves before that happens and turn it around.
Yes.
So at this point, they're still, I mean, it's normal to have arguments and frustrations, but they, at one point in this section, Lauren's like, you know, I tend to tear him down just so that I can apologize and make him think he's perfect.
Yes.
And that's kind of their way of communicating and resolving issues. Is they're not really communicating and resolving issues.
They're
skirting around them.
Yes.
So at what point, and I just want your guys' opinion, what point do you guys notice the shift? Because it might be different and I'm curious to see what you guys thought. Was when, at what point did you guys feel like, oh, these things are starting to go south a little bit?
I would say right around the marriage because that's when they weren't being as genuine.
Oh, when they
got
married?
Yeah, when they got married. Because they stopped being, I feel like you could tell that they weren't communicating their needs and wants. And it was more of a, I'm responsible for your feelings. You're responsible for my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the immaturity in that young relationship. Whereas they felt like, instead of expressing where they were at, what their needs were and saying, hey, partner, can you help me work as a team? Because this isn't working for me. They were instead going, well, I'm just going to deal with that. And I'll just pretend it doesn't bother me. And I'm in love. So when you're in love, you know, there's this false perception
that you don't
express dislikes when you're in love. And I think that I love the fact that I feel this story is really about Taylor Jenkins calling question on people with that belief system of what is love? You know, why do we fuck up love? And I really feel like it's...
She really made us analyze that a lot through the characters.
It is. And I think that the truth of that she found
So what was the moment? Like, was it the tire moment, the flat tire
I would
moment?
Have to is say...
I feel like Valerie is right in that it's like the marriage. You sort of become docile or not. You're like, hey, we love each other. Don't need to work at it anymore.
So as soon as they got married, they're like done.
But there's one moment where I think Ryan wants to have sex. And
that's what it was for me.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
that was the moment that I'm like,
she's like, I'm too busy. Like, I don't want to
She was
do
looking
right
at curtains.
Yes.
Yes.
She was like, And I think it was his birthday.
Was it the birthday? Yeah.
Oh,
there was a couple.
One that was his birthday.
There was one. Mm-hmm. His 30th birthday. She didn't want to do it, but that
and
was
rather
later.
Than talk about it.
Yeah.
So the first sex rejection.
Yeah.
Is I'm like, oh, that's not something's going on there because. Yeah. Like that's another very vulnerable moment
curtain,
for people to
the
ask
curtain
to have
ones,
sex.
The curtain one was before that was,
yeah, it was.
Before the birthday.
So this was the curtain one I'm talking about.
Yeah, and the curtain this was one was because
Ryan getting rejected, and he laid down, played dead, uh-huh. and he was like goofing with her, and he's like, "So now, do you want to do that thing?"
But do you remember that her issue with him was not so much that, but she's like. She didn't like the fact that he wasn't expressing directly
what he wanted.
He wanted her.
Exactly.
He wanted her to say to tell him that she wanted what he wanted.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't want that.
So this is his cryptic communication.
Like, yes.
And
I don't
think
like
it
that
drove
you're
a wedge
me,
between them eventually.
It did. Yeah. And I don't like yeah. that you're not owning your own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he was being, you know, in order to compensate for his vulnerability, mm-hmm. he was kind of trying to get that pre-approval from her before he asked and getting
exactly.
her to,
rather than just stating what he wanted. And rather, so that was the biggest demise for Ryan's character.
Mm-hmm.
For Lauren's character, her thing, I felt like that she needed to overcome. I think her being the oldest in her family.
Yes.
She has two younger siblings. Yes, she's bossy pants. Rachel is, I think, a year younger than her. And then mm-hmm. they've got Charlie, and I think he's about 4 or 5 years
yeah,
younger.
Yeah, and she dominated almost all the relationships that she was in.
Yes, and then she's this, I don't know, the personality where I'm right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, shoot, I relate to that because I'm kind of stinker pants that way too. And so like, this is why I'm like, oh my gosh, this is
like
why this felt like this was
your
my
love
story.
It was so your story.
Yeah. Just cause I related so well to the characters and their personalities. Cause I'm like, that's probably one of my biggest flaws.
I think everyone has that flaw in them.
Yeah. Sure. Or maybe, it's something that we all struggle with, but like, that's one of the things that I really have to work on. And I think that it was the perfect storm for them.
Yes.
And sometimes that's created problems, you know, mm-hmm. in my relationship too, because the communication aspect, and I say, after I read this book, they suffer from off the table-itis.
That's so cute. I've never heard it expressed that way.
This marriage counselor wrote a book, and it's like, too good to stay. No. Too bad to stay, too good to leave. Something like that.
Yes.
You could look it up. It's good. I've listened to it. There's like 30 things that she finds are common problems in relationships.
Oh my gosh.
And
how brilliant.
4 or 5 of them are like safety concerns. Like obviously physical abuse, you know, that's a safety problem. Get out. Emotional abuse, big time safety problem.
But even those are hard to get out of,
right.
in fairness.
Versus, exactly. And then there's some that are more mild, like, I find you disgusting, which can happen in relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
Though that's something that's easier to overcome. It's not a safety concern, but off the table-itis, she said, is a safety concern.
Yes.
Because a person never feels emotionally secure enough to be able to
be
themselves, be vulnerable, and be real in a relationship. And so I think that they grew to resent each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book starts kind of at this big breaking point where they're like fighting over where they parked the car. And you can just tell they have disdain for each other.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
Can't stand each other.
Yes.
But they can't talk about it.
Yes.
And so Lauren and Ryan decide to present each other with some options.
Yeah.
How do we get through this? How are we going to work through this? Divorce was never said. It was never on the table. What were the three options? We can start dating again. We can go to counseling.
Have an open marriage counseling. And
take the year off.
And so as soon as she says open marriage, Ryan's like, what?
Oh, like we could have sex with other people.
But they hadn't had sex for four or five months at
they
this
hadn't.
Point. Now you don't learn that till later.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we've had that exact same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's crazy. So they do, they decide to take a year off. And the rules of the year off are, we're not going to talk to each other. We're not going to see each other. We're going to be completely separate and distinct. And in a year, we can get back together and decide what to do. So that's kind of the whole premise of the book. And over the course of this year, I really loved that Taylor showcased all of the relationships in Lauren's life. Yes. So you've got mom, you've got grandma, you've got younger sister, younger brother, you've got best friend from work. So these are the people that you get to know and love.
Yes. And, and they're all very well-developed characters.
They're very well-developed characters. You fall in love with them and you can see like where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And they all have a different opinion about what works for relationships and what's right.
Yeah.
Every single one of them have a different opinion. So let's go through them.
Oh, I love that idea.
So here, like the plot kind of like we can go through the plot, but I don't think that's as important as like the why.
And I agree.
So Lauren is devastated. Mm-hmm. She and Rachel become very close over that year. They get to spend more time than they ever have together.
Yeah,
over the course of the year, Lauren's 30th birthday party comes up. So her mom decides to be a sweetheart and throw a surprise party, fly Charlie in from Chicago, and have all the family there. Well, the only people that know about their separation are the two siblings. And I just love that because I'm like, that's so how it is.
Yeah.
I tell probably my sister more than anybody else, everything that's going on, like just the closeness like that.
Yeah.
And the relationship with mom, like they love mom, but they always tease her and they like kind of exclude mom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my kids are at that age too. And I'm like, I love that it brings them together. It hurts, but it's totally normal. And I loved that she captured so accurately the dynamics of family.
She really did.
It was so,
because they're such a unit. I mean, this family is such a unit, and although they're all so incredibly different, they love each other and ultimately respect each other. And I love, you love that. You love their relationship. You love that bond. You love that unit. That's why you kind of fall in love with just
all of them.
Well, you want them all to be happy together all the time.
Right.
And I love the fact that she keeps the characters true to their natures.
Exactly.
Through their experiences. They're consistent characters. And which doesn't mean that they don't have, you know, strife or that they don't have question things, but I love the fact that the characters make sense unto themselves.
Yes, exactly. So we've got this birthday party. The purpose of the birthday party, because mom has ulterior motives, is to introduce them to her new boyfriend. And they hadn't really met a lot of her mom's boyfriends.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Because you're kind of thinking when you meet Bill that it's the first person she's dated ever.
Right. From the kid's perspective, that's accurate.
Yeah.
But you come to find out that no, the kids didn't like her dating other people. So she kept it, you know, private, which I love that the mom did that because she put her kids first, which is so hard to do. And I loved and respected the mom for that.
And I also loved the relationship between the mom and the grandma. I love the grandma character.
She's by far my favorite.
So she's so far
grandma
my favorite.
Comes to this birthday party and she's staying at, I can't remember the name of this fancy hotel where the chairs are hanging from the ceiling and they have windows of models just standing there and posing for you. And it's super high end. And they're like, what is grandma doing staying there? And everything to grandma is farcical.
Yes. She's beautiful.
And so her advice for the marriage. Okay, what do you guys think? She's like, you should have thrown some cocktail parties.
Yep.
Yes.
I loved that because then you guys would see each other flirt with other people and get jealous, and that would make your relationship steamy.
Yes.
You're seeing each other through someone else's eyes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Encourage that sex drive.
Exactly.
For advantage all of these like wonderful kind things about your partner that, you know, you're starting to get pissed off because you no longer will tell them it pisses you off that the toilet seat's up.
Right.
And so you resent them and hate them every time you see the toilet seat up. And yeah. when you're new, you go, oh my gosh, this person's such a kind, loving, attractive,
everything about them.
Yeah, yeah. Soul. Yeah. And so I think she just was so spot
so
on.
Just being, and I just like, after you've been with a person, you do stop appreciating them. Mm-hmm. Or even like, I just feel like every time I leave this area where we live is so beautiful, I forget that.
Oh,
and then
true.
I go somewhere amazing and I come back and I'm like, it's lovely and I love it here and it's just nowhere else I'd rather be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, we do that.
Yeah.
We forget to appreciate the people that we love.
And it's true. Like,
and grandma was right.
Grandma was right on everything.
I think so too. She had such a great perspective. And, you know, basically she said, you know, you don't love your partner all the time. You have to work at it.
Yeah.
It's work.
It's work.
Mm-hmm. It takes time.
Mm-hmm. I loved her perspective.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then.
And I'm sorry.
Oh, you're.
But no, I just wanted to say, I loved with the grandma how her perspective included the fact that marriage isn't about being gloriously happy all the time.
No.
Marriage is about being a partner and a teammate.
Exactly. So that's grandma's perspective, which is interesting because her daughter, Lauren, or no, mm-hmm. no, that's not her daughter. Sorry. Granddaughter, Lauren.
Mom. Yeah.
Mom's Leslie. Name starts with an L. Leslie. Thank you. Yeah, so Leslie, I kind of think of her as like a free, loving spirit.
Me too.
I wrote down a quote.
That was it Paige?
She says to Lauren, she says, your love life should bring you love. If it doesn't, no matter how hard you try, if you are honest and fair and good and you decide it is over and you need to find love somewhere else, then what more in the world could you ask for?
Yeah, so, exactly. That's page one.
So for 125,
because I highlighted it and I'm like, that was such a good quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the mom's perspective, I feel like, is almost in spite of her mom's.
Are disposable.
Yeah, yeah.
So the grandma's perspective are, if you find a good person and you're both good people, you just keep plugging away at it and, you know, you make it work. Whereas the mom's perspective is if you're not giddy, if it's not, you know, then just move on.
And she even is afraid to have a serious or let Bill move in because he's talking, I want to move in.
Yeah.
And she's like, then I'm going to know that you leave your dirty dishes in the sink. And I don't want to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want romance.
She wants to be in the honeymoon phase forever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a real, novelty is very addictive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's how we get our dopamine hits. And I feel like people get stuck in this trap of thinking that new is better or I'm happy, but I could be happier.
Well, I want that rush that I used to get. Does that mean that
because there's nothing more intoxicating than falling in love?
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah,
and let's be quite honest. That energy of them, the couple being apart from each other for a year, gave them a little more momentum after they came to their decisions if they wanted to stay together, because they get
that
new love
feeling.
We're
not going to talk about that.
I know. So we're not talking about
that. I mean, we know it's a romance novel, but I really want people to read this because I think that the reward at the end is so worth it.
Well, because I think they did the human work. I think that anytime you get to see a character actually go through and sit in their ugly and process.
Yeah.
I mean, be real with themselves and process things. You're going to have a happy ending regardless of what the ending actually is.
Exactly.
Because the character has done the work and the growth.
She does an amazing job of character arc.
Absolutely. This is somebody who, like, I want to be her friend because I'm like, teach me a great
Taylor mind. Gets it.
Let me be your grasshopper because, like, in life, I love this book because you got to see how you're supposed to process and work through things.
Exactly.
You know, and it wasn't perfect. And
through
it wasn't
lots of
pretty.
Perspectives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mom's perspective is in opposition to her mother's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was an interesting generational thing going on there.
Definitely.
Because I've just seen these patterns in my own life. Like, my mom handled this way and I'm doing it the opposite. My kids are probably going to do it the way my mom did.
Yeah.
Things tend to skip generations.
It's so true.
In spite of how we're raised.
Yeah. You know, but that's like, I overstuck with things because I felt like my mother
didn't.
Exactly. So I did it too. Like,
I think we're all guilty of doing that in some ways.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about Ben's family and they generations of couples together forever.
Yeah.
Ben's
great grandparents, both sets of his grandparents, his parents. I'd say out of the six children from his father's side, I think there's only two that are divorced. So yeah. Two out of six.
That's remarkable.
And especially in the 80s era.
His mother's siblings, she has two siblings. They're married to the same person. And
wow, the polygamy going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, those Mormons.
I'm so open and so comfortable with that. That's awesome.
And I'd say Ben's siblings are still married to the people there. You know, so not for Ben's family, for my family, my grandparents were together for a very long time. My grandfather was a very affectionate, lovely human. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was a little difficult. Mm-hmm. I loved her too, but mm-hmm.
But that dynamic worked for them because they were polar opposites like that. Mm-hmm. You see that sometimes too, for sure.
But that didn't happen for my mother.
Yeah.
So she was divorced twice.
Yeah. And maybe your mom is more like Leslie. I don't know. Did you see Leslie in your mom?
Yeah, I do see that too. A little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your mom's a doll.
She is a sweetheart.
Yeah, but it works. And it's like, you know what? If that's important to you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you wanting to have romance in your life.
Yeah.
Because that's what's important to her. And love is such a difficult thing to define.
It really is.
Because it means such different things to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it was fully ever defined in this book. And people that try to define it, they can't. Mm-hmm. It's just too big a thing.
It really is.
And too individual.
But how wonderful that it is such a big thing and that it can be felt and expressed in so many different ways.
I know. And I love that because each character in this book did. So we've got mom, grandma, then Charlie and Rachel and is it Mila or Myla?
Mila.
Her friend. Is it Mila?
Mila.
Her friend?
Yeah, I think it's Mila.
Yeah, so she gets all this advice when she first breaks up with Ryan. Mila, she's been with her wife for a while. They have kids together.
And they have kids, and they're at that grind stage.
They are. That hard stage where your kids need so much of your time and attention that you just,
you don't exist.
You don't exist. You are just getting through day-to-day things, and you are exhausted, and that's a hard stage to get through.
They're working at the relationship.
They are working at it.
Mila does a lot of things she doesn't really like to do, but she does it because she loves her partner likes it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's an important theme in this book is how do you, as an adult, as a loving partner, how do you make those decisions about doing things that you don't want to do in the relationship because they're good for your partner without resentment? And because there's so many different mindsets about going through this. And I love that in this book, really a lot of the theme and heart of this book is getting around how to accept that you are going to have to do things you don't want to do when you're in a relationship and how to have a mindset that is still communicating your wants and your needs and respecting your boundaries while accommodating your partner.
I think it depends on the relationship because the answer is going to be different for every relationship.
Absolutely.
Because some partners don't respect their other partner.
Absolutely.
And I think if you have mutual respect, you can work through this.
Absolutely.
But if you don't, it's not possible.
So do you think
I think
main
the other person will end up resenting the other partner.
It's like the positive reinforcement spiral.
Yeah.
You know, you say something kind, you do something nice, you are appreciative of your partner, they will do the same to you. And it just becomes a positive spiral in a good connecting relationship.
So let me ask you this though. Mm-hmm. Both of these partners, both of our main characters are kind, considerate, nice people. And they were both doing that, but they left out the element of being, of communicating their needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
So is really the crux of it is that you are responsible for communicating your needs and wants in a relationship. And in addition,
that was their biggest downfall.
Yeah. In addition to being receptive of the needs and wants of your partner.
Exactly.
And I really think that that's what it came down to.
So for them, that's the case. But I think every relationship is so unique because the two people that come to that relationship have different personalities. And
but I kind of think it's the crux viewpoints. Of almost
a
every
lot relationships. Of relationships. Communication is the downfall. Yeah.
Well, and I think it goes into that positive reinforcement. If you do try to communicate and somebody shuts you down,
yes,
it's hard to continue to want to try to communicate your feelings if you are not
reinforced. Feel, do you feel in this book that the characters were shutting each other down early? Or talk me through how you see.
They did.
Start
to shut each other down.
Mm-hmm.
And through that positive communication, like I'm trying to build you up and make you be perfect rather than be real.
Yeah. And through the, you know, like it, her, the main character, she was like, just express your freaking wants. Yeah. Don't make me responsible for your wants.
Yeah. But she needed to communicate that too.
And she didn't.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, growth that they both had to go through to recognize that and be able to communicate it. And that's why I think I loved how they had the emails.
Yes, if that was so
the
cute.
Emails were sweet. So they were spying on each other.
Yes.
Because they weren't allowed to communicate or talk or meet. Mm-hmm. And they shared each other's innermost thoughts. And I love the part where so the first time she's just wanting to spy on Ryan because she thought she saw him with someone else and it wasn't him at the airport when they're dropping Charlie off after the birthday party. And so she's like downward spiraling, like, oh my gosh, he's probably with another woman. He's going to leave me. I'm not ready for that. I haven't thought about that yet. And so she does. She hacks into his email.
Because she has his password.
She has his password and she sees all these drafts. And they are written to her, and she reads them.
Yep. And she only reads, in fairness to her, she only reads the ones that he
are
for
to
her. To her.
Exactly. So she goes into work the next morning, and she calls Rachel first. Uh-huh. And she's like, scale of 1 to 10. How bad is this?
And she's like, 10, Rachel's 10, like, 10, 10, 10.
10 out of 10, that is not okay. And Mila's like, I can see how you think I would say that's okay, but it wasn't. But tell me why. And I like that Mila's like, what's the reason for that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I am totally with Lauren on that one, 100%.
Really?
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is it?
Well, I mean, it is an invasion of privacy, but at the same time, if they hadn't been reading each other's emails, I mean, if she had never done that, she would still not understand Ryan and where he's coming from.
So they couldn't communicate.
Yeah.
No.
So it gave them a voice to say exactly how they were feeling without actually being rejected by telling them to their face.
Exactly. Well, and it was a safe way for them to do it.
It's so fit into their personalities too. Of I have these feelings and I actually kind of know how I'm feeling because I think these characters are self-actualized to some extent, you know, more extent than, and they're like, I have these feelings, this is where I'm at. But it comes down to that communication. Neither of them ever hit send.
No.
You know, they never hit send.
And that's just a physical manifestation of what's going on.
And so, and so I don't feel like these characters, I feel her reading his emails is what gave her the benefit, the greatest benefit from this experience. Now, was it ethically the right thing for her to be doing? Abso-freaking-lutely not. And is this one of those situations where it became a Scooby-Doo ending where, oh, it worked out great that you read those emails and you gained that perspective about him by violating his rights in a sense, you know, so.
I remember at one point when Brad and I were really struggling, really struggling, and, you know, we were having the D conversations, and
The Dallas conversation?
The D conversation. The big D word. Divorce.
Going for the big D. Don't mean Dallas.
Because I think that's, it happens in relationships and we, you know, we work through them or not. But I walked into the room one day and he was reading my journal.
Oh.
And I'm going to be honest, I haven't written in my journal for a very long time. Like, it was, I mean, I wrote in my journal when I was younger. I did that a lot because that's how I process emotions and get through things.
Yes.
But then we got married. Yeah, exactly. And we had kids within a year. I didn't have time. We were on the grind big time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think I'd written anything. But he was crying. And I'd never seen him cry. And he said, I don't deserve you. Like, I walked in, I'm like, well, what's going on? Like, he's like, I don't deserve you. Because, I mean, I things I was writing about were probably, like, so silly and sweet and innocent because I was kind of
silly, sweet, and innocent.
Silly, sweet, and innocent. And so he was like, oh, my gosh. And I was like, ah, we got some issues we need to get through. And it was like, it was kind of an eye-opening thing. But, yeah, I get it. I'm like, in a heartbeat, I would. If I was working on my relationship and trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would even, I totally was with Lauren on that one. I'm like, yeah, it's what we need to do to communicate because we have a huge breakdown there.
Well, she did it because she was curious.
Yeah.
What is going on with him?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't know. And I want to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she wasn't, I mean, she was kind of spying, but she kind of also really wanted to understand him.
Yeah,
her I think her intentions
were totally right on.
I think her intentions, yeah, her intentions were because she was doing it not to get dirt on him, not to hate on him. She was doing it to try to understand.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it, like, I would say,
keep doing it, but write emails too.
And I like the fact that she started like, okay, you know what? He's actually coming to terms and expressing himself. And because she was just avoiding the whole situation up until she started reading his situations. She was just kind of avoiding the whole situation. She wasn't doing any work. She wasn't diving into her ugly. She wasn't processing or thinking about things. She was just like,
she was just being miserable. This section was November rain.
Yeah.
Miserable November rain.
Exactly. And so I feel like he started the work, you know, he started the work. He started getting in his ugly. And I think that she was open and receptive. So the thing I like about these characters is that they're open and receptive to change, you know, And they need some prodding. And so this was a prod for her. Like, whoa, he's actually truly processing stuff. And she realized that's what I need.
I don't think that she would have started communicating, writing her own drafts.
Absolutely.
If her friend hadn't told her it's only fair.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that, thank goodness for that friend.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because I think that made all the difference for them.
It did.
Because they had to get through that barrier.
Yeah, I wonder... If this, like, what would have happened if she hadn't read his email?
Oh, then they would
be in a totally different place.
I think it would have changed the whole trajectory for sure.
Yes.
So section three.
Oh, I do have one more question.
Okay.
So this is a really loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turned out awesome and she grew as a person and had a lot more understanding, we are way more okay with the fact that she totally violated his trust. I just want to point this out, like, because her intentions were to learn and understand, and because she grew from it, so she followed through with her intentions,
then it was okay.
Then we're okay with it.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to the act itself was horrible. However, and so I think this is just a neat little human thing. Things like, what if she had done it and she still had grown from it, but he felt like it was such a crazy violation, then we wouldn't have been as open to it being okay.
No.
So
it's true. It would have been a huge, and her friend pointed that out to her. She's like, this could destroy you.
Yeah. What if you guys all get together and then you find out, and then he says, you totally violated me. You are such an untrustworthy person.
Oh, I have no secrets.
I'm not a secret person either.
But I do struggle with communication because I don't want to hurt people.
Yeah.
I can hurt their feelings. So, but that's not fair for them either. Yeah. It was a really interesting take on that. Anyway, section three, let's go to that section. Three, this is called That's the Way Love Goes by Janet Jackson. That's the way. So in this section, Lauren finally starts to heal a little bit and not perseverate and be so mopey. And she allows her friend to set her up with a guy.
Yeah.
And steam factor for this book wasn't huge. Like there wasn't a lot of sex.
Oh, yeah. In fact, they friend zoned at each other and they immediately
friend zoned.
Yeah. They both giggled about that.
Because they weren't ready to be in relationships.
They weren't.
And they weren't. And I loved that they recognized that and that they were okay with it.
Yeah.
And when they finally do move on to like more intimate, it was still friendly.
It really was. But I also loved the fact that they got to practice communicating their wants and needs without an expectation.
Right.
And so like, and I love the fact that our main character was like, you know, cause she had become quite the little, you know, like, don't touch me with a 10-foot pole. You know, you're violating me basically when we have sex, kind of a thing. And I love the fact, not quite to that level, but she's like, I endured. And I love the fact that, you know, working that she realized I have a responsibility for communicating my needs and wants. And I think that the sex aspect of that was very much like, I have a responsibility of communicating my needs and wants. It's not, I can't just blame you for not.
And I don't think she would have recognized that had she not had a relationship with someone else.
Absolutely. I kind of agree too.
Like that.
This is it. And also even when it comes to like intimacy and physical, you know, physical expressions of that, it is really true. A lot of the time at the beginning of relationships, we think that there's this period of time when it's okay for us to ask questions and learn more about you. And, but then I think like we have this thing where if I'm still asking you questions later, then that means that I failed at the beginning and I don't understand you enough. Instead of realizing people's bodies, people's things change, people's preferences change.
But that's kind of how Ryan had trained her to be.
Absolutely. But she also went that way. And Ryan, there was definitely grooming there.
Yeah, they groomed each other to get into the crux that they got into. And I think it just took outsider's perspective and time apart to recognize that again.
Yeah, Lauren even says that she grew a lot. She grows a lot in so many ways during their separation. But she also realizes that they probably could have done it. She could have done that with him. You know, she didn't have to do it alone.
Yeah.
She could have gone through that growth with him.
Yep. Yeah. But that's what grandma said too. Grandma was like, what's wrong with you people that you don't know how to grow together?
And that's a generation thing. I think that generation is too, the generation of grandma's coming from. That was like you just put your shoulder to the wheel or grind it out and you just make it happen.
Because divorce isn't an option.
It was not an option because women couldn't take out a loan and they couldn't live independently. Like women were not, they didn't have the options they do today.
Yeah.
And so, that's why that generation thinks differently than they do even now.
But then also there was also definitely a much more, because divorce wasn't as socially acceptable and stuff, there was a much more like happy wife, happy life back then too, because the woman wasn't going to leave you if she was miserable, but she would make you miserable.
Right. That's true. I hear that a lot from from my older people, like, oh, yeah, the wife is always right. That's how you get through marriage.
Exactly. Or... because she can't leave you because she'll be destitute. But if she's unhappy, she's going to take you to Titanic. Everyone's
going down. If I'm going down, you're going down with
me. Exactly. Absolutely. Not in the fun way.
So, I mean, it's just there's like what's actually going on in our culture affects like what we can and can't do with relationships too. It's not just between individuals.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. I liked Lauren gets to spend more time with her family, and especially her sister. And I love that her sister gives her a totally different perspective that Lauren just kind of got like had no idea. Her sister pointed out, and her sister's only a year younger than her, and everyone kind of skirts around. They don't tell her what's going on. They leave her out of things because she's
kind of asexual.
Doesn't have. Yeah, that's how they assume she is. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is how she is. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but she's happy.
Yeah.
And she thinks she's hurt that they leave her out because they don't think she can handle it because she's
exactly.
not in a relationship.
Like,
but she points out that your entire life has always revolved around a relationship. Mom's house, Charlie's house.
Yes.
It's all you do. It's all you think about. But I'm happy alone. I'm happy with people. I'm happy developing myself. I have hobbies I enjoy.
Yeah.
And I was like, what a healthy way to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I still feel like the family, I want to see another book about
the sister.
The sister. And I want to see,
Rachel.
About Rachel. Yeah. About Rachel. We can even call it about Rachel.
Taylor, will you do that for us? Write Rachel's about story. Rachel.
Yeah. Just because I think that from a family dynamic, that's like the next growth phase that this family needs is respecting Rachel a little bit more. And I love this family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've
and
got
I think,
all their quirks.
I think that that's probably the next area where they could, you know, is now that they've understood that they, you know, that how they've been in relationships and how. And I think that's also been part of the reasons why their relationships have set them up for failure is because they think the relationship is a salvation for their happiness and identifies them completely. And so that's why they would lose their identities in the relationships. Yeah. And I think that Rachel learned and figured out in their childhood experiences of seeing all this stuff that, no, I'm going to identify myself and bring an identified self into a relationship.
Charlie surprises everyone.
Charlie is.
I don't think that he's ever going to get married or have a relationship.
But he does.
He surprises everyone by kind of doing things, I guess,
on his own.
Non-traditionally.
Non-traditionally. He gets this lovely young woman pregnant.
On the way back from the 30th, birthday party.
Mile High Club.
And then they, when he finds out she's pregnant, they he's wants to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. So they get together and their love comes, I think they're probably attracted to each other and like each other on a certain level.
Yeah, probably. They were in the Mile High Club.
But their love grows in a different way.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's
and
interesting.
It is interesting to watch that relationship because it's like each of these characters, man, they're so, they've got so much going on, but like, it's the knocked up scenario. What do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because Charlie has never had a male other than grandpa, the grandparents and grandpa passed away, I think 14 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but it'd been quite a while. So he didn't get to see a lot of that. He was a lot younger. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a father figure in their life. And so for Ryan, and this part really hit hard for me, Ryan and Charlie really hit it off. They were like brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were good friends. And Charlie pointed out to Lauren, like, when you get a divorce, you know, it's not just about you. This is my relationship with Ryan too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love that he pointed that out because I think that's so real. Even though they didn't have kids, mm-hmm. the family still loved and cared about Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
He was a part of that family, an integral part.
I lost, you know, my mother-in-law was I love my mother-in-law.
My brother-in-law recently, you know, my sister getting divorced, you know, they've been married for 24 years. And I really miss having him around.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
I love and respect my sister, and I'm, you know.
Yeah, you just got to go that way.
But it does break your heart.
They're your sibling. My brother divorced his first wife. I knew Abby. She was like a sophomore in high school when they dated. They were together for 12 years or something. But, you know, I knew her.
We've gone through things together.
Period of time. And it was devastating when they got divorced. I felt like I lost a little sister. Mm-hmm.
Well, like my mother-in-law, I loved my old mother-in-law. Like, honestly, like I was the person that if she had to go to the emergency room, I was the one who took her. I took her to her doctor. You know, like I love her. And she was the one who was totally there for me. You know, she was the person who would come and help me with kids and stuff like that. And she flew down to, you know, to watch the baby when I needed to go be maid of honor in a wedding and stuff. And she was the one who was always had my back. Like she helped me and she was, and
it's a huge loss.
And yeah. And so, you know, and her and I would have real conversations about things, and she provided me with so much insight, and she was such a beautiful human and things like that. But yeah, I'm like,
in-laws are really special.
Yeah. I stayed with my husband probably a lot longer than I should have because I love my mother-in-law so much.
Those are, of course, your relative comes first. So in a divorce, kind of have to let go of that relationship with the other.
And it sucks for everybody.
To choose that.
I think it's hard. Ryan is right. You know, it's not just about us. I mean, like I'm divorcing your family in a way too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, Charlie and I will stay in communication, but it's you are Charlie's
sister. Mm-hmm. And eventually you do have to let them move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was a tough aspect of that book too.
Yeah.
But I mean, she
got there. She hit it. And this book has so much content for the pages.
I know. It's amazing.
Oh, gosh. I know. It's packed in there.
So I feel like we kind of hashed it out pretty well. I don't want to give people
The ending any or anything like that.
Inkling as to how they resolve it. Of course, we know they resolve it. This is a romance novel.
Yes.
But I think the way that they resolved it was beautiful.
Yes.
It was a very realistic portrait of a relationship.
Yeah.
It covers so many, you know, when we read romance novels, it's a portion of somebody's life. It's like, you know, usually when they meet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess there are romance novels like the one we love.
Oh.
It's like Jamie and
I Book Like Thor.
No, not that.
Oh, Chasing Catching Fire.
Jamie and
Outlander.
Outlander. Jesus, sorry.
Okay, but like
Outlander,
who is
Jamie?
I want
you
Jamie.
Know Jamie. Yeah. I love Jamie.
Is Jamie.
How
can
you not? Yes.
Have you not read Outlander?
No, I've only watched it. And I watched like the whole second season together.
We got together like, this is like 15 years ago when Outlander first came out.
Yeah.
Like,
I own the DVDs.
We would have Outlander nights.
Well, that is an epic love story.
Oh, yeah.
But I stopped. I got through the third season and I stopped watching it.
Well, it gets a little.
I think I got. Well,
I mean, it gets busy. Too much.
Yeah, you're kind of like, whoa, how much drama can people handle in their lives?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some scenes that, I mean, for me, and I love Breaking Bad, so, you know, I'm not afraid of like gore, but there was some stuff in there that was like, oh.
Yeah,
it's pretty awful.
And I read the books, so I was like,
Oh my gosh, you guys cracked me up. So let's talk about how realistic we thought this book was.
Yeah.
Will these people realistically ever get together?
Yeah, Yes. Oh, I mean, it is.
They were destined.
Happened to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and Brad got together.
This is my love story.
It's totally so, like, really, I think she just followed you and Brad around.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we can really answer this next question, relationship sustainability, because I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't think we should do that.
Oh, we don't?
Because I think, you know.
Maybe we can say it without saying it.
Yeah.
Has to read it.
It is a romance novel.
Yes.
The ending is predictable.
Yes.
They are going to get back together.
How do you know?
They do it.
That is how romance novels work. There's no surprises.
That's true. You guys. I think
beauty of this is how they come get to there.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
And I don't want to tell listeners that because you really need to read it.
Yeah, yes. Everybody has to read this book.
I think that they are 25. What is our 25?
I'm longer? 25 to life.
Oh, yeah.
We got 1 day, 3 months, 2 years, 7 years, 25 to life.
I think they definitely. But I also think that had they not read had she not read the emails,
it could have been different.
I feel like they wouldn't have. Had she not read the emails, I think
it would have had a totally different trajectory.
It would have had been able to, because
the crux of their problem would never have been addressed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, their relationship will go the distance because they've kind of dealt with the hardest part of relationships.
And they did it in such a... Yeah. I mean, yeah, they learned that the importance of getting the truth and expressing the truth and taking self-assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit like, so Lisa, I have to laugh because you know how you're like, oh, I can kind of be a little bit of the bossy pants and Brad can kind of be the dodge the responsibility for his feelings. And it's really kind of cute because I in my relationship with my dream bub, you know, it's funny because I learned that, like, I'm not responsible for somebody else's feelings. And you guys all know that I over-communicate. But I'm not responsible for somebody else's feelings. And so I have been such – I so demand people to, like, tell me what you want. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what's going on. I'm not responsible for that. And I don't want responsibility for that. And mm-hmm. that freaks me out. And if I ever – that makes me so anxious. I'm not going to be responsible for your feelings. And so I – am learning how to be better about saying, hey, I don't feel like you're telling me everything right now.
Well, and sometimes just listening is how we give people an opportunity to share those feelings.
That's totally true.
I'm saying that because I recently read a book called The Dance of Anger.
Oh.
I think I told you about it.
Yeah.
Did I read the whole book? No. But chapter two. It was insightful.
I need to read chapter
two. And it was basically like, as a society, women tend to take on that in the emotions because we get to express them and mm-hmm. men are not allowed to do that.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
But what men will come home and they'll like explain like some scenario that they dealt with that day. And then the woman jumps in and said, oh, that must have been awful and, you know, express all those emotions instead of just saying, what did that feel like for you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's a beautiful piece of advice.
And we groom men not to share their feelings because we do it for them without even realizing.
And yeah. and you know what? What a cocky thing that I didn't realize is that's true. We're like, oh, we feel like we're helping them express their feelings when we're actually taking over control of that by doing that action.
I never thought of it that way until I read that book. I think
that.
It was chapter two, but it was like, whoa.
Okay, so restate what that was because I need to read chapter two in that book.
It's called The Dance of Anger.
The Dance of Anger, chapter two.
Yeah, okay, it's a good one.
It's on my homework list.
Oh my gosh, you cracked me up. Well, it's a good read. I will recommend it. It's a short read too. Hot and heavy. How hot and heavy was this?
It was what was our pepper chart?
We've got green pepper, jalapeno.
It was a green pepper.
Yeah.
Green pepper.
It was, oh, Yes.
That was amazing.
Yes, yes, yes. Like that. Like that.
That was the description. And if you listened to it, did you guys listen to it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
I listened to it on Spotify because it was part of the premium membership. And yeah. it was really, I thought the reader did a great job.
I think
interpreting
so
the yeses and os.
I believe she did too.
I agree too.
It was steamy enough for what it was.
It communicated.
Yeah, I knew exactly what was happening.
Yes. Me too. Yes, those two sentences. I mean, it wasn't Harry Met Sally. I think that you know.
Yeah. I've never seen that movie, by the way.
Oh, okay, we're gonna have to.
We'll talk about that
too. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And then, what else do we want to say about this?
Our favorite line.
Favorite line.
Mm-hmm.
What was yours?
Mine was, and it's Leslie too, which is Lauren's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, wait. Whoops, that was the one I read to you already. I have another favorite line.
Oh yeah, there's
which
lots.
Is Lauren to Ryan, and she says, "These letters are the evidence of how ugly our marriage has become, and yet proof that we are tied to each other. We can hate and love, miss and loathe each other all within the same breath. We can never want to see each other again while never wanting to let go."
Isn't that so true?
Yeah. She expressed that.
What was your favorite perfectly. Line, Lisa?
Well, there's a couple. Can I share them?
Of course.
Every time Grandma says farcical.
Okay. So,
oh, I have a word too that I loved. Farcical, but I also loved dilly holes.
Oh, dilly holes. That was a cute one too. I know.
That was so
my favorite line was pretty much every word that came out of Grandmother's mouth.
Well, here's one. He's looking at her like she's a hamburger and he's on a diet. That was Leslie and Bill, right?
Yeah.
When they were first getting introduced to the family. But then this is another grandma line. So I really related to grandma for some reason.
Oh, yes. I love grandma.
She said, "Just because you can live without someone doesn't mean you want to."
That's yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh, yeah, grandma, you get it. And
I love the follow-up interview because it came along to that too where in the follow-up, I mean, didn't they have a conversation about kind of that topic of, you know, you can live without someone. I'm having a brain fart.
I don't remember the follow-up interview.
Okay,
in
never
its
mind.
Totality.
Never mind. I can't remember what I was going to say.
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry, guys.
Well, so, I think that the author, she wrote this because she was in a happy marriage and didn't want it to fail.
It was her anxiety.
And so she wrote this because she wanted a guide to how not to have a failed marriage.
How smart was that?
She did such a good job just delving into every facet that you can.
Yeah.
And I think that she did hit the crux of most marital problems. I mean, there's so
really
many ways that we hurt each other, but I think communication tends to be the primary thing people struggle with.
Absolutely.
So she did a great job. So do you guys feel like this book is relevant? Does it matter? Is it engaging?
It's amazing.
Yes.
This is the kind of book that I really would want my kids to read.
Absolutely.
Anyone that's getting into relationship.
Oh,
I think that
a husband's
read if you're in a relationship, read it together with your partner, your significant other.
Mm-hmm.
I just think
it really
hit all the marks.
I think it totally hit all the marks.
It wasn't steamy. It's not going to give you anything about
exactly.
sex, but I loved that they brought that aspect in because communication is such a huge part of sex.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And I think that's
a huge
issue in so many marriages.
Oh my gosh. It's so, and honestly, I think that the best sex
or
happens with
relationships,
people that you
not
can
just
have the most communication with.
Yeah.
And for me, I can perform if I need to perform, but as far as like loving the moment sexually, it all comes down to, and
sometimes that you do have to perform. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, just because like in Ryan and Lauren's case, maybe you would prefer to sit and look at curtains, but what's more important?
Yeah.
The feelings of your partner, and maybe they want to have sex and you're just like, oh, okay,
yeah,
I don't feel like doing this right now, but I'm going to because obviously
it's important to you right now. And then next time you're going to take your time.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, no. And I think that it comes down to the communication thing though, too, is it's not that when they were younger and they were new relationship, when you pay attention to people and you ask the questions and you express what you want, because you, when you're first starting out in a relationship with someone, you know that they don't know what you want and how you like things and your preferences. And you eagerly are wanting those things from other people. I think people forget that 20 years into a relationship, 10 years into a relationship, you still are eager to learn about that person.
We're going to always do that our whole
life. Here's an interesting thing too. I feel like from our culture, I don't know if I'm wondering how you feel about this.
Oh, from like the Mormon background?
Yes.
Because Courtney and I both have... We're from Utah.
Yes, and I'm a heathen.
Well, I'm a heathen now, but you know.
I mean, sex is not a... It's not something you talk about. It's not something you think about.
It's not only that, but it's also shameful.
It's shameful.
Until you have your special underwear.
Yeah.
Is that basically like, hey, so that's actually sexy as fuck underwear.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Yeah.
I cannot tell you when I left
the
church.
Oh my gosh.
And I took my garments off and I put on like a matching red bra and underwear.
I could totally see like so high red.
Amazing, I felt.
Because those underwear are not
they
sexy
make you feel
at
so
all.
Frumpy.
Oh,
they're
so frumpy.
Ugly, white.
There's nothing sexy about that.
How can I describe with the. They're like thin, white. Like long johns.
And the, okay.
Like so a man's got, long johns.
You've got a top and a bottom. Yeah. And the you have to wear your bra because they have to be touching your skin to save you from a potential fire or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. So you have to wear.
So you wear your bra on top. And I have the silky kind because they didn't get as sweaty. Yeah. And they would just like crawl into my bra all day.
And
I'd be pulling
them
out.
You already have amazing breasts. You didn't need more.
But I had to hide them. And then I had to stuff. It was constantly like shifting my clothes. To have that awful layer underneath makes you feel unsexy,
you had to wear them too.
Overheated, and just frumpy as hell.
Oh, well.
No. So, but
yeah,
I think
I don't miss that, but that ruins it. That ruins sexy times.
I think, but it's the Mormon culture, but it goes beyond that. I think Catholics, a lot of religions feel that way and present sex in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are we going into sex feeling uncomfortable about it anyway?
Right.
So to tell somebody, like, I want to have sex and I want it this way
it's not at all a part of your DNA.
No.
It's not ingrained in
you. It's kind of a learning.
And I want to change that cycle for my kids.
So I'm curious.
How do we do that, though?
Here's how.
Okay.
Thea wants us to have our children read erotic novels so we can teach our children how to have good sex. I love it. So the next book we read, I kind of want it to be super hot and steamy.
I think I would love to find a book that's hot and steamy that is a technical guide we could give to our children.
There you go. So let's find that.
Okay.
But the one that Thea recommended was The Billionaire's Club.
Oh, yes. I read one of those because Thea recommended it.
Exactly.
And I've already read one of those.
And so maybe we should go over that. And let's do that.
Okay. This is the thing where, like, so I read one of them and I'm like, I could write a way better novel, instructional
manual.
Someone
else did it. Let's do it.
Let's look at that.
And they actually have instruction manuals. I can bring some.
I think that sometimes maybe I'm speaking for myself. I think as a woman, I thought the man would bring all of that to the relationship.
Mm.
He was the one that was supposed to know everything and guide me and tell me how to do things or do them for me. But, you know, what happens when the guy thinks that of the woman? You know, so you're in a weird place when communication helps, your willingness to try new things, your willingness to move past like that, I don't know, like thinking that the other person can read your mind even.
Exactly. And that,
which is so weird though, because I and from that perspective, like all of that responsibility is like, it's always been my job to make sure everything turned out perfectly. So, so then
with how the house runs, or my job to be responsible for your emotions.
Yes. And my job like, to be responsible for, you know, being able to receive and pick up and mix it up in the bedroom and be exactly what you want all the time. So for me, I'm like, oh, well, let me just pull out my 37, you know, in this situation, you have these 37 different options. And then this, you can do this. And if that doesn't work, then try this. And if that doesn't, you know, so like, whereas it comes down to, you know, just a, I'm performing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just part of the performance of everything.
But I think that this is like, this book kind of pulled in some of those main issues. Mm-hmm. And I still, again, I say communication is the crux of a lot of people's sexual tension or issues.
What I was going to say, I was wondering is I've gotten to be very outwardly sexual, you know, because I did go through the divorce and everything. And one of the things that I feel has been useful for me is because I do communicate very well sexually, as far as what are your needs? What are your wants? These are my needs. These are my wants. And that has been an amazing bridge with men to get them to communicate about all of their emotional things as well, because it's like, oh, well, that's a platform that's very interesting and stuff. And so like talking about, you know, and there's very much a very big reward for them if that all works out great. And so I'm being super open.
I understand this entirely, Val. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm picturing you like having, like using sex as a way to like talk about emotional things. And I'm like, that would not work for me. Like,
no.
I'm not going to have a deep breakdown like an emotional we're doing that.
What I'm saying is the parallel between, you know, in this book, she talks about how we don't communicate our sexual needs, and we don't communicate how we like things, and we don't take responsibility for communicating what we want sexually, and we don't take responsibility for really being adaptive with our partners in what their wants and needs are sexually. And what I'm saying is that when you you can bridge with a lot of men by doing that sexually and making that part of the sexual requirements of we're communicating, you know, like that's a place where it's very easy to be like, if you take lead with a man in expressing and being game for new things, and you take that lead, then you can really easily take that over to, okay, in our relationship, we also talk about feelings. We also talk about these things, and it's crazy how much I get men to open up to me.
Yeah. Yes. If you are willing to talk to me about how you want sex, you're also willing to talk to me about how you're emotionally feeling about our relationship.
Or how you want, what restaurant you actually want to go out to.
Yes. Yeah. And I can get men to communicate to me that, like, that's what I learned. I learned from being single.
Okay. So the take home point for this book is, if you want to communicate, have sex. If you want to learn how to communicate with the opposite gender,
it can be a bridge.
I wonder if that's different for like same gender relationships, where communication, because swear to you.
Absolutely. Both ways.
Men and women have very different communication styles. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to break through that barrier.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of men,
I guess you just
never,
literally break through that barrier.
A lot of men who have not talked about their
with your body parts. That's the take home message. Anyway, we probably better wrap it up. But this was a great, great read.
Thank you so much.
We'll do a spicy read, because I think that would be a good one. And then don't forget to rate us if you love us.
Subscribe.
And if you don't love us, I don't want your rating. just, you know.
Was it rate, subscribe, rate, and review.
Subscribe and review, yeah. And then you can go to our webpage.
Oh, yes.
MyPerfectRomance.com.
Please,
you can find links to emails. You can find links to Twitter feeds.
We want to hear about your romance.
Yes.
Stories.
Yes.
Email us your love story.
Words, please. Not pictures.
Since you just basically... Words, not pictures. nothing explicit. Oh, my gosh. Well, like, I think that this book was a really good example, like, chapter one of a love story. Like, I thought it was so cute and perfect. And honestly, I was like, that's my love story. So you just read it. That'd be great. And
you do have a cute answer.
Right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
thanks,
hugs and kisses.
Hugs and kisses. Love you guys. All right.
Bye. Bye.